Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. And there's lots of fun stuff to talk about. There's lots of fun things to talk about. We could talk a little bit more about lawns, which we'll do. We can talk a little bit more about pollen. We can talk about Grace's photograph, which she just sent me. And it's a really, really a very interesting photo. I hope you get to see it. You can see this one of two ways. You can actually go look in the woods right now. Or you can go look at Grace's photograph. It's a beautiful plant in flower. Aren't those beautiful flowers, Grace? Grace saw it up near Hurricane Landing, but it's really widespread throughout South Alabama right now, and it's a great plant. When we were growing up, we called it horse sugar. Horse sugar. I'm sure it has other names, but horse sugar is a good name. And horses would, you know, you'd stop your horse in the woods and they'd munch on it. Horse sugar. And then you say, what are they munching on? And if you were a brave little boy or girl, you would take a leaf yourself and chew on it. And you'd find out, man, this thing is sweet. It tastes like, well, it tastes like tea that's been slightly sweetened and a little bit lemony all at the same time. It's really a cool thing, horse sugar. And then you got to where you'd chew on the leaves all the time. You got a little thirsty, chew on the leaves. Your mouth was no longer dry. It was kind of a great thing, horse sugar. Great plant, really wonderful plant, horse sugar, Simplicus tinctoria. Horse sugar. Great plant there, Grace, a beautiful thing. When you're out in the woods, you know, I don't know how the leaves, in summer the leaves taste really good, but you can try the fresh leaves, try some of the old leaves. You'll get that little bit of that flavor. It's kind of cool. It won't hurt you at all. It's really cool. It's a really neat thing. Simplicus tinctoria, that's exactly what you're looking at. So I have confidence that because of those flowers that that's what you're seeing. Simplicus tinctoria, a really cool thing. Have a great picture, too, of a black swallowtail that's moving around. Black swallowtails. So I'm trying to think, what is this black swallowtail laying its eggs on? And they like lots of plants. They like parsnips. They like members of the carrot family, lots of Apiaceae, things that grow in swamps. That you don't even know the names of, water hemlock, other things. They will actually lay eggs on those things. Cicuta, and wild parsleys, they lay their eggs on those. So they're really cool plants, but they will, you got parsley in your garden, they're going to lay the eggs on that. They'll have a great time, and they'll hatch out into the big, beautiful butterflies, the big, beautiful black swallowtail. It's probably, did it just hatch? I don't know. That's a good question. It may have. I think it's probably, maybe you've overwintered too. So back to David's question about his wall. I feel like I don't want to make it too difficult, David, but let me make this suggestion. If you're stacking two center blocks on top of each other, you need some way to stabilize them. Now, you can pack the soil really heavily. You can pack it really heavily, which destroys the drainage. And it's hard to do in these soils to pack them heavily. You can pour a footing to keep the center blocks from going wonky when you stack two on top of each other. A footing is, you know, it's going to have to be about, probably 6 inches deep, effectively. You might even need to put some rebar in there. You can pour footing with the concrete and then put that on top of it. But you know what I'm going to suggest, David, because this is real simple. Don't stack cinder blocks. Don't stack them. That way you don't have to use any mortar. That way you can alter this thing any way you want to if you don't like it. If a stone gets a little wonky, it ain't going to matter because there's not another stone on top of it. You won't have messed up your drainage. You won't have to use any mortar at all. And it'll be plenty high because you're only wanting 12 inches. That extra 4 inches, you won't even notice it. Just make it 8 inches high with one cinder block high. Very simple to do. Incredibly simple to do. And then put you don't even have to mortar between those cinder blocks. The water will escape very easily then. You won't even have to worry about that. Put your soil in there. If it's good organic soil with lots of pine bark in there, it won't matter. You won't end up with drainage problems. You won't end up with connection problems to the soil underneath. It may be 10 inches high, 11 inches high rather than 12 inches high. What difference does that make to you? It'll be good. David, I'm making this simple. Making this real simple. You can tell me whether you think I'm crazy. But I'm trying to make your morning better. Trying to make it more your morning better. Got some other pictures I'm going to have to sort through. I'm going to look through these things. Boy, that's an interesting plant. We'll do that. We'll come back to look at that. I think that's a rose, it looks like, that we're going to be coming back from Rusty and talking to him about it. But we're going to be talking about lots of other things, too, this morning. I'm curious if for those of you who bought plants at the plant sale, what you bought, what you're going to be doing with them. If you haven't bought a plant from the Mobile Botanical Gardens plant sale, get out there. I haven't been out there this morning because I've obviously been at the radio show. If there's any good plants left, you ought to grab them quick, 11 to 4. If there's any, there was a great selection of citrus this year. I was very pleased with it. I am jealous. If you got a Hamlin orange, I am very jealous. I want you to take good care of it. You know, I thought, I don't really have room for another citrus. I want a Hamlin orange so bad, but I don't have room for another citrus. I wish I had a Hamlin, but I don't have room for another citrus. I went through this several times in my head, and then this morning I went outside and I looked, and I thought, you know, that would be a perfect spot for a Hamlin orange. I got a spot for it. It'd be perfect. And I didn't buy one. And it's very hard to find them. And, boy, if there's any Hamlin oranges left out there, you could make me very jealous by buying it. Or you could leave it there, and I might try to figure out how to pick it up myself. Great selection. Did I mention Hamlin orange? This is one of the treasures. I try to talk about we forgot about the great treasures of the Gulf Coast, like loquats and jelly palms. Back in the days when people made ambrosia. Now there's a term, and I was talking about this with a friend of mine the other day. Who's from Mobile, he said, you know, my mother, she made ambrosia all the time. People don't even know what ambrosia is anymore. It was one of these treats at Christmas, and you made it with generally with coconuts and oranges. Maybe you put nuts in it. Everybody had their own little trick to make an ambrosia. But the key to making ambrosia is to have great oranges that are ready at the right time. And let me tell you, Hamlin oranges fit that bill, and that they were very popular on the Gulf Coast because they were pretty hardy. They're hardy, and they peaked much earlier than most of the oranges that we buy. Blood oranges, navel oranges, all of those other oranges, they peak later in the year. They don't develop their full flavor until January, February, March, April. But if you wanted in December, the sweetest orange you could imagine was a Hamlin orange. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful oranges. And Keith says he bought 8 plants yesterday. And I hope they weren't 8 citrus plants, Keith, because I'm going to be really upset. So there it is. The Hamlin orange was the one we did because it's just candy sweet, as people like to say. That first or second week in December makes the best. It will be the best ambrosia you ever had for Christmas. Delicious Hamlin oranges, one of my favorites, and they're available at the botanical gardens. And it's a real Gulf Coast treasure. Louisiana sweet is pretty close. And it's a little easier to find Louisiana sweet. If you really want to help me, But if you can do this, get a Hamlin and a Louisiana Sweet, plant them next to each other, and tell me which you like best and see if you can tell any difference. Huh? David, is horse sugar plants good for pollinators? Sure it is. It certainly attracts pollinators. I don't know whether it makes good honey, David. That's a great question. Now, this stacking the blocks for the patio, David, oh, man. You're going to have to have a footer in there somewhere. We'll come back and talk about it. Bye.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay. All right. That's enough. Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday Morning with Plain Gardening. The show can only go up from here. Now that we've gone through Tiny Tim, it's like you're playing a game and you land on the square where there's the one where you go to jail or whatever it is. Well, we've gone through that. Now we can get back to the real show. But it's just part of the game here. You got to land on Tiny Tim at some point. You have to land on Tiny Tim at some point. Got great pictures of marigolds and calendulas. Dan did a beautiful job. That's really good. You know, calendulas are something we don't use as much. I've got some of my calendulas that are blooming right now. They are absolutely stunning, and they can look really good. They're cool season annuals. And it's possible, and it's done. I did mine. You can get them to bloom just about all winter long, and they're really nice plants. I noticed the other day, what did somebody call them? Because the old name was pot marigold, P-O-T, and you know, nowadays people forget what a pot was. It was not what it is now. It was a pot. It was something you grew things in. It was a container. And so now they've got some fancy new name because pot marigold doesn't work anymore. Calendulas don't work anymore because it's – I don't know why. And this is great. So Sydney has sent me pictures in Bay Minette, and it's blooming in my yard right now. And I look out my window and I say, man, this is what I want from a garden. This is what a garden should be. When I see this blooming in my garden, which I have, you know, you used to see these a lot in even in yards in Mobile. People have forgotten about them. It's a buckeye. It's a red buckeye. I can tell you that I remember the first time I saw a red buckeye, Sydney, it's shocking. There's just no other word for it. I was shocked. I must have been. How old was I? 11 years old. You know, things can get really weird when you're 11 years old. And I'm running through the woods. You know, it's the moccasin woods. There's cotton mouse everywhere. It's on the edge of a swamp. It's really cool. And I'm lost. I'm totally lost. Where in the world am I? It's in the Pearl River bottoms. And I come up and I come up out of the swamp and I'm up a little slope just out of the swamp, and there is this thing in front of me. It's like the flashing swords at the gates of paradise. It's the most amazing thing you've ever seen. These red flowers, red buckeye, stunningly beautiful. Isn't it, Sydney? Isn't it incredible? It's just a beauty. It's red buckeye. It's our native buckeyes. We have Alabama's the buckeye state, as I like to remind people. We have more species of buckeyes than Ohio, but probably more than any other state. It's really fun to think about them all. We got white buckeyes, we got red buckeyes, we got painted buckeyes, we've got Ohio buckeye, the stinking buckeye, the fetid buckeye. We've got the yellow buckeye, the big gigantic yellow buckeye, which gets to be 125 feet tall. It goes in North Alabama. That would be something. All of those buckeyes, in Alabama. And this is red buckeye has got to be one of my favorite. It's a great one. So it'll produce those little buckeyes, Sydney. When the fruit comes, you know, people used to carry around buckeyes for rheumatiz. If you had rheumatiz, you carried around a little buckeye in your pocket. It was supposed to stop rheumatism. Did nothing of the sort. But it's a good thing. There's a lot of theories about why that developed. The idea, the one of the theories is, and I don't know that this is true either, but it's told a lot. It's told occasionally that buckeyes were considered a gift of welcome, and so when you were introduced, if you were in the Choctaw Nation or Creek or Cherokee, perhaps Chickasaw, if you were introduced to a new person, you gave them a gift of a buckeye as a way of sort of saying, "Here, this is a friendly gesture. It's like a warm handshake, and something you can carry with you. I'm giving you a buckeye." So people would carry them around as in their pockets as tokens of friendship. That's what buckeyes are. They're very interesting, and really cool. Buckeye trees, love them a lot. Tony has decided that I'm related to Tiny Tim. I occasionally think, I have anybody who's lived in the South. I've decided that anybody who lives in the South, whose family has been in the South for more than, say, a couple of hundred years, and I think mine has, is probably related to everybody. I got Irish and Scotch and African and Choctaw and German and Welsh, and the list goes on and on and on. And they're all part of who I am. And Tiny Tim, I hate to say it, but Tiny Tim is probably part of who I am. I'll have to get a genetic test, as Tony suggests, someday to prove that I am related to Tiny Tim. That would be very interesting. David has sent me some beautiful pictures of cabbage gumbo, which reminds me, David, isn't it time for me to talk about green gumbo? That is a beautiful cabbage gumbo. That is just absolutely stunningly beautiful. It's also time to talk about green gumbo, gumbo's herb. All of the herbs are out there. My broccoli, the broccoli is still good. The broccoli leaves are great right now. The kale leaves, the collard leaves, the mustard leaves, they're all good. To make a good gumbo's herb, it's gumbo with herbs, with plants, with green things. There's a lot of debate about it, and David can tell you his version of it. David Hubble tells you his version, because there's a lot of ways to think about this in New Orleans. But traditionally, gumbo's herb didn't have a lot of meat in it. And it was designed for meatless occasions during Lent, I suppose, during Lenten season. And it's absolutely delicious. But you made it with as many different kinds of greens as you possibly could. And right now in my yard, I can do this. I've got kale. I've got collards. I've got komatsuna. That's three. I've got mustard greens. I've got broccoli greens. I've got collard greens. I've got turnip greens. That's seven. Isn't that seven? And then I'll probably use things like onions, wild onions from the yard. That's a green, too. It works. It's the time to do it. I guess if I got desperate, I could also use cabbage, which is not a desperate thing to do. It would be really good. If I grew cabbage like Johnny, I'd definitely use cabbage. But gumbo's the herb. You make all these things, and you could make it with a roux. You could make it with a sort of a mirepoix, which is a sauce made from different types of vegetables cooked down to make sort of a base sauce. Either way, and then you put all those vegetables in there, cook it like a gumbo. It's absolutely delicious. It's a great thing to do. You need some peppers. And this year, my peppers came through the winter, so I got plenty of peppers to do that. I'm very excited about that. Gumbo's herb, great-looking, beautiful-looking grandmother's cabbage gumbo recipe for today. that David Hubbell is making. Absolutely beautiful. We'll post a picture of that, and you can take a look at it. So, David, I hate to – David, we got to think about this wall. David, if you're going up three cinder blocks, you definitely have to use a footing because you're going to lose them all. Because the soils here, if you don't have a footing underneath them, it's just not going to work. And you, if it's more than three blocks high, you might also need to use rebar to hold those blocks steady. And I've seen people do it without it, but I've also seen those walls just get pretty ratty looking very quickly. And so I would recommend a footing next to the patio, next to your beds, to avoid having all this concrete, which can begin to impair drainage. Just go up, just step it down once when you come to the beds. Try not to go more than one block high. What about ahi peppers? You know, everybody's just like asking me all the right questions today. All the right questions. What Dan asked me, what about ahi peppers? And would any of those greens go with crawfish? Indeed, you could make a green gumbo with crawfish, though you might lose the flavor of the crawfish or the greens because there's a lot going on there. And David's view that anything without okra and stewed tomatoes is not. That's only true in restaurants that don't know a lot about gumbo, David. In fact, traditional gumbos throughout the Gulf Coast often didn't have tomatoes. It would be sad if we had to restrict ourselves to gumbos with tomatoes because we only have good tomatoes part of the year. So traditionally, people probably did make some gumbos with tomatoes at when tomatoes were in season. But traditionally, gumbos, probably most gumbos didn't even have tomatoes in them. David, we're going to have to argue about that one. That's too important not to argue about. And not all gumbos had okra in them. Okra would be great, but obviously there's a gumbo earlier in the year when you had sassafras leaves. Lots of other things to thicken it with. Beautiful, beautiful pictures. Ahi peppers, we're going to come back and talk about that here in just a minute.
I dig no more taters. I decline I ain't going to pick no peas. Because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go. I get down on your bending knee.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Oh, lots of pictures to stroll through and enjoy this morning. I got a picture from... where was it? Who's that picture from? It's a beautiful rose. It's a picture of a rose. And I'm double checking. Rusty. Thank you, Rusty. Found it in the woods. I believe, Rusty, that rose is Cherokee rose. Because it's blooming in spring, I don't think it's Bracteata. I don't think it's McCartney's rose. I'm going to spend a little more time looking at it carefully to make sure that it's not, because it's blooming in spring. If it was a big, tall vine where you found it climbing over things, Rusty, with lots of flowers, and it was all in bloom now, probably you're looking at Cherokee rose, which is not a Cherokee rose at all. It's a rose from Asia. I don't know why it got the name Cherokee rose. It's hard to say why. It's just one of those stories that got told that it was, I don't know why. But it's actually from Asia, and it's not super invasive. It spreads around a little bit in the wild, but it's not super invasive. It's not a huge problem. There's a very similar rose that's Rosa Bracteata, McCartney's rose, and it will eat you alive. It will eat your yard alive. It is very invasive. It's a terrible rose. It's a horrible rose. It is just a miserable thing. And so we want to make sure that what you have is a Cherokee rose and not a McCartney rose, not the Bracteata. We'll do that. Pawpaws, please let me get to this, please. Pawpaws need sun. There's no question. There's another thing that pawpaws need. Someone bought a pawpaw at the plant sale. Pawpaws, in order, they grow really well, and I like them. They make a little clone. They'll kind of, they sprout, and they'll find their way to sunlight, even if you don't plant them there. They'll eventually find a way there. But here's the thing. You need two different types of pawpaws to produce pawpaws. They have to cross-pollinate. And so we can talk about that, but they do need sun. They do prefer sun. They're beautiful plants in their own right. They have beautiful leaves. The flowers are really weird looking. They're not super showy, but they're really cool looking. You'll really enjoy looking at them because they're so strange. But, yeah, I'd put them in sun. I'd put those pawpaws in sun. What else have I done? Ahi peppers. Man, can't believe I skipped. I got to get to this ahi pepper thing. So let me tell you, I ran short of ahi peppers. A-J-I. That's how I'm going to pronounce it. Ahi. That's sort of how you pronounce it, I think. Ahis in general refer to peppers from South America, not the peppers from Mexico, but peppers from South America, and particularly a pepper that is Chile, the bacatum peppers, the so-called bacatum, B-A-C-C-A-T-U-M, bacatum peppers. And they're ahis in their homelands of Chile and Argentina, Brazil, Peru. They're very popular there, and they are, I love them. Now, here's the great thing, and I don't want to blow another day when we could be talking about this fully. They're perennial here. I know that's crazy. Listen, I got peppers that are bushes. They've been in my garden now. They've been in my yard. Some of them now, I got one that's been there for 4 years. I don't know how long they would last, but I keep them going, and each year they produce tons. But this winter, I ran short of my ahis. One of my favorites is ahi omnicolor, and I use it to season everything, and so I had to use serranos. And serranos have a very distinctive taste. It's very good. It's very interesting. They're a typical Mexican pepper, and they're quite interesting, quite good. I like heat. It's not. It's just that, man, I thought, gosh, this is not an ahi. Ahi has such a round, deep, rich, fruity flavor. There's a heat there, but it's a peck. It just goes pow, and then it backs off. It's really interesting. Great for cooking with. I really like it. It doesn't, you know, you're not swishing this heat around in your mouth all the time. It's just a quick, hot peck. And I love those ahis. And yes, would the ahis be great? They really would be great. Ahis are one of the peppers that I think we should be doing here because they do much better in humid climates, most of them do, than the annuum peppers that everybody thinks we should grow because they're from Mexico. And there's nothing wrong with Mexico. It's a cool place, but it's very dry for the most part. And most of those peppers don't tolerate poblanos and anchos and they don't tolerate our really humid conditions, and they quit producing. These bacatums, they love it. They do very, very well. So there it is. Hey, do we have a caller here, Charlie? Yeah, I'm listening.
Go ahead, Catherine.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Catherine. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
We have a lime tree that's in a pot. I think it's a Persian lime.
Yeah.
And it's covered, really, really covered in blooms. And my lemons that produced nothing year before last and very little last year are really, really covered in blooms now, hundreds of blooms. I'm wondering, will they throw off what they can't maintain or, you know, see through to the fruit, or should we do something to help that process?
They will. And, in fact, they're really good about sorting it out generally. And so don't worry with the blooms because and people freak out when this happens. But you'll have, you know, there might be my right now, my clementine, I mean, it must have 10,000 blooms on it. I can't count. I do not exaggerate. It's a small tree, and it must have 10,000 blooms on it.
Uh-huh.
I will lose 95% of those blooms.
Okay.
they'll all drop off and nothing will happen.
Okay.
And that's good, because then the 5% that remains, that's, I don't know what's 5% of 10,000, but that's a lot of fruit.
Right. Yeah.
And so you want it to lose most of those blooms, and it will, and it'll do that automatically. Now, when the fruit forms, if a lot of fruits are close together, when they begin to develop, when they're about the size, you know, when they've begun to develop about the length of a knuckle on your thumb, if there's a bunch of them, then it's good to thin and thin them to about 6 inches apart. That's a smart thing to do if you can do it, if it's a small plant. And with your lemon, it should be. So I would thin them to about 6 inches apart when the fruits form, and they're about as big as the tip of your thumb to the first knuckle.
Okay. That answers my question, then. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
So while we're at it, Carolyn Baymanette is asking, will these 39 degree and 35 degree nights going to be an issue for the newly planted Meyer lemon sapling? No. Be just fine. A hard freeze of 32 degrees, they'll probably be just fine too. I wouldn't even worry about 32 degrees. I would worry at 20 degrees. I would worry big time at 20 degrees, but I hope you don't have 20 degrees. Even in Bay Minette, I don't think you're going to have 20 degrees. I don't think. But 32, we might worry just a little bit, but no, I wouldn't even worry then. Just cover it. If it worries you at all, just put a little blanket over it. That'll be fine. 32 degrees, not a problem. 30 degrees, probably not a problem. But below 30 degrees, you'd have to start worrying. If we get to that point, and I don't see it happening at this point. I don't see it in the near future, within the next 2 weeks. I don't see it happening. And after that, it becomes very unlikely. Then we would cover it. But I think you're in the clear, Carol. I don't think you have to worry about them. Next year, when winter gets here, we can talk about all those details too. Charlie, let's grab one of these callers here. Ann, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, last week talked to you about Gray House, Dolphin Island Parkway. Sent in pictures. You told me what to plant.
Yes, ma'am.
You told me it was going to be at the plant sale. I looked at the plant sale list. I couldn't find what you told me to get.
Maybe
I misunderstood it. Maybe I jotted down the name wrong. Maybe I misspelled it.
Yeah, that's okay. They may not have had it, and I didn't double check on that list. They often have it. Here's another thing you can try. So Anna's got a house. It's a narrow bed. It's in kind of shade. We need something that performs well there. And that doesn't get too big. And if you can find it, and you could probably find this in multiple places. It got to be hard to find for a while, but now is holly fern. Holly ferns would do would be very nice there. Holly ferns?
Yes, sir.
And they're evergreen. They're kind of leathery like leaves, but they're really pretty. Holly ferns would be very nice there if you don't find the coon tea. So yeah.
You told me floridanium?
I told you two things. One was if I remember correctly, one was a coon tea. And the other was an Illicium, Illicium, and I didn't make this easy for you. Florida anise, anise. There's a version of Florida anise that's, I think it's called Leprechaun. I'm pretty sure it's very small. It's very dwarf. If I remember correctly, they have some of those now, and there's also some dwarf forms of Agarista, but. Are you going back out to the plant sale today?
I'm getting dressed right now.
All right. So look for the holly ferns. I'm gonna make sure you get the right thing. So I'm going to figure out how to get in touch with you while you're out at the plant sale. We'll look at and see what we've got, and we'll go through that list. Is that good?
Yes, sir.
So why don't you send me your phone number again? Oh, I've got it here. We're good. I'll give you a call, and we'll make sure you find the right plant, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Good talk to you, Carol.
You,
There it is. So David says gumbos need a thickener, and you know it can be okra, it can be filet, it can be flour, which we would call a roux, basically. As David says, David Hubble says, the best gumbo is the one your mama makes. It's interesting. So it is interesting that a lot of what we, as David points out well, the Cajun Creole wave that started in the 80s sort of influenced the way we see gumbo. It's too bad because that's kind of a restaurant thing. And there's a lot of different gumbos out there, a lot of different ways to make them, and I think they're all good.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. David, we got a lot of talking to do on this wall. I think you're okay. And, you know, good luck on the kudzu at the top of your wall. He's doing that to irritate me. You know I know this, right? You know I know this. So there it is. We're okay. Whose other questions did I not answer? Crypto Marine sends me this discussion about ordering gumbo in Southern California. Let me say something. I think this is probably a good generalization. You may feel like it's unfair, but let me just say, never order gumbo in South California. What in the world were you doing? Crypto Marine, what are you talking about? They gave him something where it was a bowl of liquid and a spoon is what he said. And he said, where are the chunks? And they said, well, that's not what gumbo is. So I don't know. So I guess they have their own version of gumbo in Southern California. But let me just say, don't get it. Don't do it. What are you talking about? That's crazy. That's crazy. Charlie, we got some callers. Let me talk to them before we run out of time. I'm listening. Dan, is that you?
It's me.
What's up?
Oh, man. I had my hands so full with tomatoes and peppers and all that stuff the past couple of weeks. I've been supposed to call you and ask you this for like 3 weeks now, but my girlfriend's mom's got a couple of Meyer lemons.
Yeah.
And they're blooming now, but they've still got fruit on them that's not all the way ripe. Should we pick those or leave them on, or what do you think?
No, I mean, just no. One of the interesting things about lemons, and lemons in general, and this will happen with Meyer lemons, particularly in a mild year like this one, is you might get several blooms and fruits and blooms are on at the same time. That is somewhat typical of lemons. It is, and it doesn't seem to be a bother. So no, I would say use those lemons as you need them. Pick them off occasionally. And they don't have to be fully colored up to be useful, but just no, you're good. Don't feel a need to pick those lemons off. And Meyer's lemons are good about flowering even as they're still fruiting, even as fruits are developing. So they may have a Meyer's lemon in a typical situation may bloom two or three times a year. So you'll have fruit all year long. That's typical of lemons. And not a big deal when it comes to lemons. The one thing you're asking a lot of that plant, of course, and it probably needs a little fertilizer, so make it happy by giving it some fertilizer. Cottonseed meal would be fine. Just put some cottonseed meal on that plant, okay?
Okay. I thought as much, but, I was supposed to call and ask you, so.
Yeah, that's good. Well, now, if there's some plants that it doesn't help to have the fruit on when they're still blooming. It doesn't have to help to have the fruits still developing when they're still blooming. But a lot of plants, grapefruit, classic case. Grapefruit are usually not good until February, March, and April. That's when you pick them. But and so if they're going to flower, they're going to flower. They're going to want to flower in March and April. So often with grapefruit, you're going to have fruit. If you're picking them at the right time, you're going to have fruit and flowers on at the same time. Some citrus don't do so well that way. Satsumas, I wouldn't do that way. Okay. Yeah, but you're okay.
And then one more thing, while I've got you.
Yeah.
On sort of for a more of a for me question is, I got these Guguta and Tromboncino.
Oh, man.
I still have not planted them yet. When should I go ahead and get those started?
Yep, I'd definitely do it. And it's easier to start those in the ground. David Hubble may disagree with me on the Guguta, but I think it's with most of those squash plants, it's easier to make a little hill in the ground planting three or four seeds. I think the ground will be warm enough. Make sure they get plenty of sunlight. If you want to wait a couple of days for the ground to warm up again after this cold spell, it'll be warm again probably by Wednesday or Thursday. You can wait and put them in. If you don't want to wait, put them in, take a little piece of clear plastic, put it over to heat the soil up just a little bit. Not too much, just a little bit. And you can get them germinating really quick. But I think you're fine. Go ahead and put them in the ground now. You do want to get those things started as soon as possible.
Okay.
And particularly, I don't know, I'm David may have a different experience with the Guguta, but it takes a while to start the Guguta, and I'd go ahead and start them now.
Well, all right, I'll go ahead and get started. I'm getting the trellises built up for it, too, so I'm excited about those.
All right. All right. Good to hear from you, Dan. We got another caller. I'm listening. Hey.
Yes, sir. This is about kumquats.
Yes, ma'am.
And a friend of ours brought us the most delicious ones and the largest ones I've ever tasted.
Yeah.
And we ate them, and I saved every seed. So now I'm wondering, how long do you estimate would be from seed planted small tree to production?
Somewhere between 7 and 15 years.
Oh, dear. 7 years from a seed?
Yes, ma'am.
Uh-oh.
So it's fun to do. It's fun to try, but it's not the easiest thing to do. Kumquats would probably do it faster than most plants. But seedlings can take a long time to develop. So it's better to get the big kumquat. And the name of that big kumquat, and I know which one you're talking about, and it is really good. I mean, they're really big.
Sweet.
They're so good. And Nita, what is the name of that dadgum kumquat? I'll think of it, and we'll tell you about it. And you can probably, we can figure out how to get one for you.
Or maybe you mean at the botanical gardens?
At the botanical gardens or somewhere else. And they're not going to be commonly sold, but I did see some sold the other day at places besides the botanical gardens. I'm going to have to. I got a lot of names in my head, but that one is not coming to me right away. But it's a really neat
maybe
kumquat.
Maybe I could email you or something, and you could send it to me that way.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. It's a really neat kumquat. So we'll do that. Call me next week, and by that time I'll have remembered it, and we'll talk about it, and we'll figure out how to get it.
Well, her tree happens to be 10 feet tall, but it's probably 20 or more years old.
Yeah, so what happens is that when you graft, when you don't do start from seed, you're actually starting from an adult plant with adult tissue, and you graft, then it happens much quicker. So if you buy one, if you buy one that's grafted, it's going to take you 3 years to get good production.
I see. Okay. Thank you so much. Okay.
You're welcome.
I will be waiting for the name of the other one.
Call me next week and remind me, but I'll look it up. I'll look it up and I'll figure it out, and we'll talk about it, okay? All right, boy, Heidi. Those were all really good questions. We've had a lot of fun this morning. I have the official approval thumbs up from David Hubble. Start the Guguta right now. He says they start slow but take off in May. Guguta. David, did I say that right? Guguta. I try. Yeah. We actually have a little song about that, that thanks to David Hubble, that we play every now and then. It's a lot better than Tiny Tim. It's been fun, folks. Enjoy the lawn. You can't have a lawn if you're not enjoying it. That's the rule. Okay? We'll talk next week.
Me and my best friend Lillian and her blue tick hound dog Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played.